Okay, so we've dealt a little bit with anger, our anger towards God, and we've picked out that anger with God, somewhere in our anger with God, something is wrong and it's not with God. But that doesn't mean we don't come to God and share what we feel, what our feelings are. They need to be given to God. I also encourage you to allow a forum like that with your children. And that doesn't mean it's open forum. That doesn't mean they can blast you in front of your friends or anything like that. But I really encourage you to have some avenue where they don't have to suppress their feelings, where they can get it out, and where you can deal with it. Okay? And allow there to be a time factor involved with that. Sometimes after they've vented their feelings, if you wait 10, 15 minutes, half hour, and go back to them, you can really have a high quality communication time. Again, I'm not getting it from direct teaching, I'm getting it by God's modeling. Do you understand? Okay, let's look a little bit at our anger towards other people. We're told in Ephesians chapter 4, was it, or 3, that we're to be angry and not sin. We're not to allow the sun to go down on our anger, and we're to get rid of anger. So, okay, now we got this wonderful teaching from God. Now we say, God, would you please give me an opportunity to use it? I heard some laughing. That's not the way we usually pray, is it? It's kind of like the old adage in the Christian circles is never pray for patience. Is that right? You say, hey, that's one of the worst prayers you can possibly pray for. It means something's going to go wrong from that moment that you finish the prayer to who knows how long. And, you know, and so we think, let's not pray for it. Poor attitude on our part, isn't it? One, we think it's impossible for God to communicate patience to us, and we don't value becoming a patient person. God forgive us, but we are like that. Anger seems to have a kind of a ready access to us, doesn't it? Things just don't go right. Sometimes there are circumstances that we can't deal with, and that tends to be more anger with God, unless it's somebody else that sets our agenda and turns it around. Children do that. For some reason, they're always off schedule. None of them have ever asked permission from me to get sick. Hey, Dad, looks like your schedule's going pretty easy now. Suppose I just get sick. They never do that, so they chop your schedule up and you can get angry. But sometimes what really gets you is when somebody just does something blatantly evil to you. Okay? Then the question is, what do you do with it? I'm going to paint an example in my own life. Happens to be one of the ones where it worked out well. That's why I'm going to share it with you. We used to live in a cul-de-sac. There were 5 duplexes around the cul-de-sac. The duplexes were together with the double garage off to the side. That meant the driveway was in such a position that the driveway nearest to us was our neighbor's driveway. Everyone got the picture? The sidewalk went right in front of our house. I had my study right next to the sidewalk. It's winter, and we have some neighbors, and we've been trying to get along with them pretty well. It's kind of close quarters, but we're doing fairly well so far. But one of the things they're really sensitive about is that driveway. Okay? Sound familiar? Some kind of a way? So during this winter time, a friend comes to visit my wife. She just met her in the hospital. They had a baby at the same time. She pulls into the driveway to visit my wife, and our neighbor comes out, thump, 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 just chews on her. My wife goes out, and he just chews on her. This is outside of my window. Study. Guess what's happening inside of me right now? Temperature is rising. Thank God, I need help. Slide the window back. I ask my neighbor, please don't talk to my wife like that. Shut the window. He turns back, doesn't say one word of apology, and walks back into his house. By now, the temperature has gone up even further. I am cooking. Did you think I would cook? I mean, do I look like the cooking type? Yeah, but I'm losing it. I thought it's the way redheads got rid of their anger is to have it fall out. But so here I am. I say, God, what do? I am really angry. He says, outside it's snowing. So I pick up my snow shovel. I walk across the court, and there's a widow's house. And I grab that snow shovel, and I shovel her whole driveway. It's got about 1.5 to 2 inches on it, and it's not hard. And then I do the sidewalk around her house. I get all stoops cleaned off, and I'm still warm. Say, God, now what? My neighbor? His driveway? His sidewalk? Yeah, that's about what God would have me do. I went over and I shoveled both of our driveways, up the walk, his stoop, and I went back in the house. Most of my adrenaline was thereby taken care of. Okay? My anger was disposed of. Shortly after that, his wife came over and just apologized profusely. I'm so embarrassed. He never did apologize. He never did apologize. But I was kept from major unrighteousness. Okay? My anger with him was consigned to God. And God's use of my anger worked righteousness. Okay? Be angry and sin not. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Get rid of the anger. There are commands that the living God has given us to do, and we've got to do that. We've got to do that. If I'd have just said, okay, I'm not going to be angry, I wouldn't have done anything righteous. But the situation called for action. City of in Washington, there's a family that grew up, had a next door neighbor who was into child molestation. The neighbor molested the child, not once, but several times. Parents' response is to tell her not to become angry. They never dealt with the neighbor. They never pulled the neighbor over and said, you will never be welcome in our house again until that changes. They never reported the man, and he continued it for a number of years. Okay. Now, what would have been the correct response in Dad's heart? Okay. I mean, that guy needed a blessed case of anger. Not anger that moved to vengeance. But he needed to do something. He didn't need to sit on his posterior, to say it nicely. He didn't need to do that. He needed to take some dramatic action for the protection of his family. He needed to show anger for his daughter's sake. Does that make sense to you? The daughter needed to know that Dad was absolutely infuriated that that would happen to his daughter. He did absolutely nothing. Okay? The anger is a God-given gift to do something about it. It says, man, I got to get going. And it isn't the kind of thing where you say, ooh, this is a bad feeling. I just need to be tolerant. Just be tolerant. Just be tolerant. Don't do anything. Just be tolerant. That's a virtue in our society, supposedly. But boy, there's a lot of anger out there, and it's not dealt with in a godly way. Okay? Would that he would have been angry. Would that his wife would have been angry for him for not being angry. She didn't do that. So she lived with that kind of a situation for years. It was never dealt with until some years later. And she was a very, very scarred girl. Okay? The anger of man doesn't work the righteousness of God, but suppressing the anger of God doesn't work righteousness either. God gives us anger to do something with it and to do something that's constructive, and we need to come to him immediately to direct what we feel. We don't get angry with things that we ought to be angered with as societal problems. Only the church in particular has been really slow at picking up what's being taught in the public schools. Really slow. And they need a good case of anger, but they need more than that. They need direction. They also need love for their enemies. It's rare that you see a good balance on that kind of thing. But something needs to be done. All that it takes for evil to prosper is for the good to do nothing. And it does work that way. It does work that way. Okay? So this thing called anger can be a motivation to get going and do something right. But man, you just got to come to God fast. You got to say, God, what do you want me to do? I know this is wrong. I know it's terribly wrong. But in my state, I'm not very good at taking the right action based on what's wrong. So help me out on that. Any comments or questions about when somebody does something wrong to me, what kind of a general approach I need to take about it? Any specifics? Yes.
Well, if you somebody says something about you, and I had a situation where a neighbor gossiped about several people, and by the time she moved out, she only lived there a year. She had ruined several relationships between people in the neighborhood, and she spread some stuff around about me, and also some stuff came back through my child, that her child had the mother refused and the child refused to our child, and she came back to me with it. I never said anything to her about it. I just kind of let it sit because I was afraid of what I was going to say.
Right.
And also, you know, I'm the kind of person who does not like confrontation.
Right.
And I try to avoid confrontation, even if it's maybe a godly one. But, you know, every so often I see this woman still, because she has friends there. And I can't really say that my anger towards her is gone.
Right. Actually, it's a, yeah, that's...
with a lot of contempt. You know, for just basically for the kind of person I think that she is.
Let me share with you a circumstance that was shared with me recently about a lady who was in a similar situation. A friend of hers had gossiped and really maligned her to a group of others. And her first response was to pray about it for some period of time. Then she went to the woman, and this wouldn't have been my approach, but this was hers. She said, I just came to apologize. The lady said, apologize for what? She says, I must have done something to you that was really hurtful for you to speak the way about me that you did. And please forgive me. I mean, the lady was just blown away. She'd never dealt with anybody who had done that before. And within a not unreasonable time frame, it wasn't years, it was weeks or months, this lady came back on her doorstep and said, I want to apologize for all the awful things I said about you. She had anger. She took the anger to prayer. took the prayer to God and came out with that as a creative solution. It worked out pretty well. You know, you'd like to give a canned formula that works every time. You can provide God's principles and they do work. But the people that you're dealing with are different kinds of people, and the Spirit of God knows that. He's wonderfully creative, and He can direct you in different actions. Again, this anger moves you to action. Different actions that can be taken that really are what the Scripture calls pursuing righteousness. And we're told to pursue it. We're not told to be laid back about it. We're not told to be tolerant about it. We're told to pursue it, race after, chase it down, do what needs to be done on your part. And then the rest is God's. Then the rest is God's. So one, do pray about it. Two, ask God, is there some creative solution that I can do? Is there something I can do in going to her? And individuals that hate confrontation are the best confronters. You know that? They are so sensitive to the people that they talk to. They sweat it out before God in prayer. There are others of us who like confrontation. I can remember sitting in a church service once in Kansas, and I listened to the preacher, and he was terrible. He was absolutely awful. He had a nice group of people out in front of him. He didn't feed them at all. He gave them all trash. And I was seething by the end of the service. I said, God, can I straighten him out? Never got permission. And he would have never probably taken it. I would have been a stranger that walked up to him. He'd have looked at me and he'd have seen two barrels with boars on them. I have something to say to you. Wonder what that would be. Then walk out. The individual that's sensitive really has a care for not saying things that should or could be taken as hurtful. What they need to do is not compromise the truth that needs to come across. When we were up at WSU one time, a gal came to me after we talked on church discipline. This is, I'm probably jumping ahead here a little bit towards the latter part of the week. And we were talking about live-in situation was immoral. And this gal came up to me afterwards. You could tell she was pondering the talk real well. And she says, can I talk to you? I said, yeah, you can. She says, well, she says, the situation that you discussed in Bible study today is my situation. My girlfriend's boyfriend is living with them. She says, what should I do? I said, well, I think you should confront them. She says, I hate confrontation. She was in tears. I said, you may not believe this, but you're going to do a much better job than any of us here. I said, I can do it. I mean, you can give me their name and I'll go over there. I said, they're not going to take it very well from me. But you wouldn't hurt anybody. So if you would go over there, what they're doing is not right, it's wrong, should bother you. You should get upset in a good way. And you should go over and explain to her why what she's doing is wrong before God. I said, I'll pray for you. Class ended. She took off. I didn't hear anything about it a few days. I didn't think she'd do it. It's rare. I mean, it's rare for a lot of people to do it, except those that really enjoy it. But she went. She came back. I said, how'd it work? She says, you won't believe this, but she asked him to move out. No way. Yes way. She wasn't acting out of her anger, and the righteousness of God was worked out. Okay? So you may be an individual that's very non-confrontive, you may be very compassionate, or whatever, but you may be the perfect person to work with such a person if you prayed up beforehand. Okay? If you prayed up beforehand. And I encourage you to have others pray for you too. Spiritual warfare? Oh, wow, is it spiritual warfare? Okay? There's the other bracket that we haven't touched is there are times when you're angry at somebody else because of your sin. Not their sin, your sin. You ever remember coming home from school and saying, so-and-so gave me a C. They ruined my car. They made my time with my parents terrible. They are just mean, mean, mean. Well, did you study this part? No. You know when you see it even more blatantly is when somebody loses a job for poor performance. And Christian employers work that all the time because what they're struggling with is they feel like they're a creep if they let somebody go when they're not doing a decent job, when they're not working fair employment for them. So there are times we get angry. They fired me. They put me in a situation where I can't meet my bills. And you get angry. What do you do with those kinds of situations? It's your sin. You need to come before God and ask God for forgiveness for your sin. You need to ask God for wisdom to see your employer or teacher or whoever it is in authority in a balanced light rather than taking it as personally vindictive on their part. Comments or questions? It's not easy. I mean, they hurt your feelings really well. Shelly?
I see what you're saying, and I can, like, see it in the people, like my sister, for example. Like, it's just kind of a defensive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's really... And what I see is it's great, we're angry over things from our past.
Yes.
But we don't really know specifically what they are and what we should do about them. And we just wait upon the Lord to start with us, or have it...
Turn to Psalm 13. If I do this correctly, I'm going to make a psalm writer out of you. Psalm 13. Everybody got it? Okay, follow along with me and catch these words. It's a short psalm. It's one of the more compact ones. Some of the other psalms of David or Sons of Korah or who else are pretty long, and you'll find some of these things spaced out a little bit, but I want you to follow the flow here. For the director of music, a psalm of David. So David took this writing that he had and he gave it to be sung at the church. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me, answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I'll sleep in death. My enemy will say, I've overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. Now, let's follow this as a whole. Now, if you're a psychologist, and this individual comes and sits in front of you and says, how's it been going lately? Not real good. I mean, can you describe how not real good is? How is it? How's he feel? Terrible. How terrible?
Abandoned.
You have a feel for abandoned? How about God forsaken? Ever feel God forsaken? Have you ever had problems just wrestling with your thoughts? I mean, you got this problem and your thoughts are just working you over. Okay? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow? Every day have sorrow. Now, if you have somebody that cries a lot, every day, What's the clinical diagnosis? Depression. David is depressed. Who's depressed? David is depressed. Who's David? He's a man after God's own heart, depressed. Christians are not supposed to be depressed. I know, but David is depressed. What? Let's suppose you're in a church service and somebody stood up and shared how they felt, and it sounded like verses 1 through 4. Okay? What would the reaction be? Let me take you away and straighten you out. Okay, you need some serious talk. Sit down here. I'm going to preach at you for a half hour. Again, here you have a situation where there's emotion. The emotion runs deep. He has been praying. David, have you tried praying? Well, yes, I have. Could you tell us how long you've been praying? One night? It's open-ended, isn't it? This isn't a day thing. This isn't a couple day things. This is, I can't remember, my last answered prayer. Okay. Now, one, we normally don't persist that well, right? If we've prayed a couple times and God hasn't gotten in and done anything about it, he had his chance and now we're going to do something about it. Roger, you had a comment?
I was just wondering. I don't have time to be depressed this way. You know what I mean? I mean, he's the king. He can take some time off and weep all day long. He's got servants to do everything for him. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Sometimes you just have to be tough and go on. So how do we deal with that? I mean, the depression hasn't been taken care of. It's just sort of...
Now, if you say that, though, have you ever looked at a king's schedule?
Well, it's the president's schedule. It's only broken down into 8-minute slots.
I mean, all of the problems of the whole nation are on your doorstep. You say, well, he didn't have time for this either. Most of the people I meet that are depressed and don't want to be depressed don't have time for it either. But they are. And probably speaking, there are some of us who don't empathize enough with the situation to be of help. There are some of us who empathize too much with it and give them justifications for staying depressed forever or longer. There are other of us who roll in with a D9. I'm depressed, and just throw them on the heap. I don't have time for you, and moving on. But here's a situation where you can take, again, your feelings. We talked about anger, but there's also feelings of abandonment. I've been left alone. I've been forsaken. I'm carrying a load I can't carry, and I'm getting no help. And you say, pray, hey, I've done it. Hey, I've done it. Come on, don't give me the quick fix. I have prayed. I have prayed, and it doesn't work. Okay? How long do I have to do this? How long do I have to wrestle with my thoughts and constantly struggle and every day have sorrow in my heart? I mean, there's a limit to how much a soul can handle. Look on me, God, answer me. Give light to my eyes, or I will die. Have you ever met anyone that down? I mean, I'm not going to make it. I'm just not going to make it. What's worse is the ones that I've been witnessing to all these years are going to look at him and laugh. Here he is. There's Doug the Christian. Look at him. He's just really down. He's the one that said, you know, trusting in God was meaningful. But look, he's a mess. And he died. Huh. Somehow. First part of the structure of the psalm is articulating the way it feels to God. Just like talked about in anger, sorrow, depression, give it to God. Say it the way it feels. he won't be blown away. There is one individual on earth that you cannot shock. Teenagers can shock their parents, but people cannot shock God. Forget me forever. How long is this going to continue? How long do I have to fight with my thoughts? God, this is terrible. Terrible. I'm going to die if this keeps up. And then what about my enemies? And what about your reputation? Because my reputation hangs on yours. That's important. Give your feelings to God. But if you quit there, it's a fatal stopping point. You need to get to the point where your focus shifts off you and shifts on to God. Your focal point needs to go back to what God has done for you in your life. It also should go back to this. Why? This is a holy record. In some of your recollections, you have asked God for things in prayer and He has answered and you didn't even notice they were answered. Right? I mean, you prayed and said, oh God, please give me this, and God gave you that. You didn't even notice. You didn't even say thank you, God. David goes back and he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. That's something that's constant. There's something about the character of God that goes into the deepest pit. It's a cable. Kind of wrap your arms around that, hold fast to it, the cable goes up. And when you begin to look at the unfailing love of God, it has a way of transforming what's been going on already. David doesn't say, I'll sing to the Lord for I know He's going to be good to me sometime in the future. What's he say? He has been good to me. He has been good. Now, take the hurt in your heart. Take that thing that makes you sorrowful, depressed, discouraged, and write it down. I mean, it's one thing to read through it with David. If I were to ask people, generally speaking, over a wide variety of ages and years, I say, what's your favorite book of the Bible? Favorite book of the Bible, out of all the books, what's your favorite book of the Bible? The one that's going to come in first, usually, is going to be the book of Psalms. And yet it says such wild things. Why is that? Well, there's no other way we can articulate it. It's not accepted. We have kind of a phony view. We can't really say things as they are because we don't look spiritual. But this is spirituality, working through these kinds of things this way. So if you take them and you say, well, let's take the heartaches in my life and write it out. Say, man, I can't even write it out. I mean, I'd have to have waterproof paper and pen. Okay, get a transparency and buy a Sharpie. Okay, write down. Get it out there. And then take the faithfulness of God in the way that He has ministered to you. Take a good look at what He's given you. Take a good look at the way that He's preserved you since you've become His own. Take a good hard look at it. Also, take a good hard look at the cross of Jesus Christ. Does God love you that much? Would He offer His Son, His only Son, whom He loved, so He could live with you forever? That's what's at stake, right? I find it a little bit difficult when I start feeling sorry for myself. I think, God doesn't love me. I mean, if I were working on the outside, I could be making much more than I'm making on the inside. I wouldn't have all these problems. How come those that are ungodly's kids are always well and mine aren't? God doesn't love me very much. He just doesn't really care for me. The only thing He's ever done is Jesus Christ has died for me, and that wasn't... You see what I mean? If I meditate on the death and resurrection of Christ, it gets harder and harder to feel sorry for me because so much has been done for me that I... And if I don't appreciate that, I mean, what's it going to take? It's hard for us to be thankful for our daily bread. Why? He might not feed us tomorrow. Are you with me? Say, God, I want to thank you, but I have to hold back a little bit in case there isn't enough tomorrow. You say, but I fed you every day of your life up to this point. When do you finally say thank you? When do you finally say, I trust you? When do you finally say, I'm fully trustworthy? How long does it take? Since I die, God, I won't complain about lack of food anymore. Yes, but that's the problem. Okay, but I trust in your unfailing love, and as my heart begins to study what God has done for me, my perspective changes. Very often, that's all I need to get out of depression. Okay, that may take some period of time, but it's enough a lot of times to pull me right out. The same individual who was absolutely in the pits at the beginning of the psalm says, my heart rejoices in your salvation. I'll sing to the Lord. There's another good remedy, is singing. Say, well, I can't carry a tune in a bucket. Doesn't matter. Go where other people aren't. When I was aboard the USS Jack, we had some real nice, noisy turbines. You could walk by those turbines and sing top of your lungs. No one else could hear you. Check the oil flow on the bearings. Do all those things you're supposed to do and sing to God. Sure helped me get through some long watches. Okay? Help pick up my spirits, help put things into perspective that weren't into perspective. Singing is a wonderful thing. If those of you who go to a job and you drive by yourself, turn the radio off. Say, well, I'm listening to wonderful singing. Either sing with some good radio or turn it off and sing anyway. God, but I can't stand the sound of my voice. He can. He would really like to hear from you in song. Okay, so if you can't carry a tune in a bucket, he won't mind. Don't join the choir, but he doesn't mind. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. Well, we need to close. We hope we've given you some insight on emotions, godly emotions. Emotions in your life tend to either produce commotion or locomotion to drive you in a good direction. People who have gone through deep sorrow are very powerful. We attended a church in Barrington, Illinois. We listened to a couple who had ministered in Irian Jaya for years. They were making a trip from one river mouth to another. They got caught in a coastal storm. The boat overturned. They lost two of their children. Died. Great sorrow. Immense sorrow. But you know what? I could listen to those people for hours. Depth. I mean, they weren't superficial. They were deep, godly people. Commotion or locomotion? Given the energy, drive, power to live a much deeper Christian life than you're living. Don't disparage your emotions. Don't be all cerebral. God has blessed you with a lot more than that. Let's pray. Father, thanks for our time together. Bless us. In Jesus' name, amen.